You're listening to a Rare Drop podcast. Check us out at raredrop.co. Hey everyone, Kevin from Rare Drop here, asking you to head over to our Patreon and check it out. It's patreon.com/raredrop. Perfect place to engage with Rare Drop and enjoy the best community content we have to offer. Our 6 membership subscription levels offer exclusive content, behind-the-scenes moments, merch discounts, live Q&As, and so much more. Check us out at patreon.com/raredrop, and myself and the entire team are excited to see you there.
Action, adventure, and ancient enemies await on Rare Drop's tabletop roleplay adventures. Join us Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern as Reckoning Hour journeys through Kaldheim, and Sunday at 7 p.m. as Ancient Relics and Hokey Religions makes their way through Wildmount. Tune in to watch at twitch.tv/raredrop or fb.gg/raredropco.
Oh, hey. Hi, everyone. How are you? Welcome. We're doing a bit of a hot start because we just started talking and catching up, and then it got spicy. But welcome to Broman Podcast, episode 136. It's been awesome. 136 episodes. We're joined today by Zach Weigel, the founder of Gamers Outreach, whose last name I hopefully said correctly. Yay. Hooray. I didn't mix up letters. I'm so happy. So we were just talking about something that was actually super interesting about fundraising. And so you were mentioning, like, when you're talking to other charities that are interested in the space, there's a really traditional fundraising mechanism that, like, people might not be using in the gaming space. And I was like, I don't know what that could be. And then you were like, grants. And I just was like, holy shit. So, like, what is it about grants and like the fundraising that we're doing online that seems to be like the disconnect?
Yeah, well, Gamers Outreach, you know, we're an organization that brings video games into hospitals. We're trying to make play accessible. And our organization really started in a grassroots way, which we'll get into, I'm sure, a little bit later.
Yeah.
Because of that and our roots in the video game space as gamers, you know, our fundraising really started from people competing in video game tournaments we hosted, and then streaming became a thing. And then we had people, you know, like yourself, who started broadcasting online and, you know, teaming up their communities to raise money in support of what we do. And so as we've been building out our programs and as we've been thinking about fundraising, some of the traditional ways nonprofits fundraise, yeah, we haven't really explored, because we've been sort of building through these community channels of fundraising and these grassroots and internet ecosystem that we all have grown up in. And we've not really explored things like grants. You know, like, a lot of nonprofits will basically put together proposals where they go out to people who have large sums of money, and they'll say, hey, I want to work on this particular project. Mm. It's going to take this amount of time, and here's how I want to fund it. And then somebody comes forward and says, cool, I'll give you a grant to do that thing.
Yeah.
If you're a charity, though, the thing with grants is, like, you have to kind of find those people who are willing to fund those grants, right? And so, like, a big part of the battle is just, where do you go to find those people?
Yeah.
And then another part of the battle is, like, okay, well, once you get that funding, you need to report it back. So it's
all these strings attached.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. All right. That's awesome. Thank you for the hot start there. So yeah, let's back all the way up. So like I said, Zach is the founder of Gamers Outreach. So let's talk about what Gamers Outreach is, I guess, at first, like your mission, your goal, and the things that you're working on. And then after that, I would love to know what was it like going through the journey of, like, Gamers Outreach doesn't exist and to now? Like, what did that look like?
Awesome. I mean, dude, happy to talk. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut off a little bit there. Somebody's like, I'm in a hotel at the moment. So I was like knocking on the door to, like,
that's awesome. I'm here.
So cool. Anyway, yeah, man, happy to share the story. You know, so Gamers Outreach is an organization that's focused on making play accessible in hospitals. And we've been around now for about 14 years. We use video games to make activities readily available because from our perspective as gamers, video games are unique in that they enable play at scale. So if you think about like a big building hospital, like 300, 400 patient rooms, you've got kids and families that are coming into these facilities that are going through treatment, right? All sorts of circumstances. And oftentimes they are limited in their ability to have access to play. Sometimes they're physically limited. Sometimes they're limited by the infrastructure in the hospital. Sometimes they're limited by various policies that the hospital may have adopted around how tech is managed in the facility.
Ooh,
so in our case,
yeah.
You know, and this is like, I mean, I'm talking like broadly about, you know.
We yeah, I just hadn't considered like tech management across different hospital systems is completely different.
Yeah, it is. And that's it's really, it kind of speaks to some of the nuance of why we exist in the first place.
Yeah.
So what we've been thinking about is like, all right, well, if you're a kid in the hospital, if you're a 10-year-old or an 18-year-old, how can we provide you with a tool that lets you have access to social opportunities, lets you have access to play? And how can we make that tool the same for everyone? Like, how can we enable play at scale? So if you think about it, like a playroom in a hospital is limited by physical space and what kids can get to that playroom, right? If you go to a
yes.
hospital, if you've had a big surgery, if you can't get to the playroom, you're probably stuck in your, you know, your 10x10
yes.
space, whatever.
I've definitely been stuck in my room in a hospital before when I was a teenager. Nothing to do.
Yeah, so you get it, right? And we had a kid we were working yeah. with who was waiting on a heart transplant, as an example. This child was in his hospital room for 9 months, like almost a year.
Wow.
And during that time, yeah, crazy, right? The doctors didn't want him leaving his room because they were worried, hey, if something happens to this kid, we have to try to keep him alive. Like, we need to make sure he's near all the stuff that we would use to ensure he's healthy. Well, you know, 9 months, I mean, imagine being in your apartment for that long, right? Like, you're not allowed to do anything. I mean, video games are the gateway to the outside
yeah.
world. And sure enough, this kid's mom was telling us, like, you know, if it wasn't for video games, my son would have gone insane because at least he had access to this digital playground. He could go onto Minecraft, play games with his friends, and be a kid again in some ways while he was waiting for this treatment. So games enable play at scale. What we can do with video games, if a hospital is equipped with video games and they can manage all those devices, we can simultaneously allow all the kids in the hospital, regardless of their age, regardless of their physical circumstances, to have access to play at the same time. And that's really meaningful, right? Toys are great, but they're limited in terms of inventory and age relevance. Like a 17-year-old
yeah.
doesn't have to maybe want to play with the items that are meant for
yeah.
kids, right?
Yeah,
so,
I don't think so. right? Yeah,
yeah,
like, we got SpongeBob. 16-year-old's like, no.
Right, exactly. And in fact, this also speaks to something else about our work, which is oftentimes when people think children's hospital, their mind goes to like little kids, right?
Mm.
But, you know, 16-year-olds go to pediatric hospitals. 19-year-olds are sometimes even people in their young 20s are sometimes in pediatric environments. Maybe they started getting a treatment in this place when they were younger and it
yeah.
just makes sense for them to stay in that same facility. So we're trying to make video games available and easy to manage in hospitals. And this all started when I was a high school student. About 14 years ago, I got sick over my summer break in my junior year. I wasn't in the hospital necessarily, but during that time, I developed an interest in esports. And I was like basically sick all summer, got really good at Mortal Kombat. And by the time I was ready to go back to school, I would like selfishly wanted to compete in video game tournaments because I wanted to brag to all my friends about how good I had gotten at this game. I started organizing grassroots events in my high
yeah.
school. And at the time, Halo 2 was super popular. I put together this tournament, had like 300 kids in my high school and from other neighboring high schools who had signed up. Like, I was putting flyers in people's windshields. I was like really trying to like promote this. What was really like my community's first ever esports event, right?
Yeah.
Before esports was really even a buzzword. So this is like 2007, 2008.
Yeah, it's back in the day. People were making fun of you for that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
100%.
So it just so happened there was this police officer in my community who belonged to an organization that basically went around and like educated parents about different types of content and media and like what may or may not be appropriate for various age groups.
Oh, cool.
So this police officer, I actually was looking for like an intern or a security officer who could come by my tournament to provide some like t-shirt security.
Hmm.
Just so happens this guy has the phone and he's like, I'm sorry, what is it you're doing at your high school? I was like, oh, I'm trying to organize. Hi, my name is Zach. I'm trying to organize a Halo tournament at my school. I'm wondering if you have any police officers who would be willing to like come by and just, you know, just check on things.
Yeah.
We have some parent chaperones, but we've got like 300 kids from rival high schools coming to the same, you know, to our lunchroom. And it'd be nice to have somebody come by.
Yeah, that's actually really smart. What part of the country were you in?
This is in Michigan.
Ah. So there lots of high school passion.
Yeah, you know, big anyone who follows college sports, right? Michigan, Ann Arbor is a college town. The University of Michigan's right there. People are very passionate about football. There's a big rivalry with Ohio State, right? So like, yeah. it's one of
you
the
want security.
Yeah, it's a nice idea to, and I mean, again, like high school rivalries are strong too, right? Like yeah. You've got in the high school that I went to, there were probably four or five neighboring high schools around us. We all compete in sports. All of a sudden we're like now competing in a video game tournament, right? So it's yeah. Just like, I didn't think anything necessarily was going to happen, but you know, we're just trying to be smart, right? Like trying to be responsible. Like, let's get some people here that can help us, you know, manage crowds. And it just so happened, this police officer belonged to this organization. It's called the Parents Television Council. And he was like, you know, I'm surprised your school is letting you host a Halo tournament. Don't you realize Halo is a mature rated game? And I was like, well,
oh crap.
I was like, I don't know, man. I'm in a film as literature course right now. We just finished watching the movie Blow. And I can tell you that movie seems to be better than Halo. And we also have parental consent forms too. Like even prior to this guy asking the question, like I was trying to do, I worked at GameStop at the time. So I'm like smart enough to know, hey, you know, like this is an M-rated game, like 17 years old. Like I'm renting my high school lunchroom, you know? So I was putting up my own money at the time to try to like, you know, organize this event. Anyway, long story short, this guy calls our school district superintendent. He's like, hey, well, okay, I'll look to see if I have any cops who can come by and call you back later. Don't hear from him again. He calls our school district superintendent and he leaves her a voicemail. He's like, hey, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I just got this phone call from one of your students at the school. He's trying to organize a Halo 2 tournament for the kids. I believe games like Halo are corrupting the minds of America's youth. Kids are training themselves. I mean, literally, this is like Jack Thompson era stuff, right?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, Satanic panic level stuff.
Yes. A portal to the underworld is going to open, you know, if you play Doom or, you know, like, I mean, Quake.
My body hurts.
No, I mean, it gets worse. He literally, I'm quoting him word for word. He says, I believe games like Halo are corrupting the minds of America's youth. Kids are training themselves to kill playing these shooting simulators. And he said, I believe this event is a hazard to public safety. Like you have all these kids from rival high schools. They're going to be coming together. They're going to be playing these violent video games. And I don't think this is an event that's appropriate to happen in a high school.
Wow.
And this is about 2 days before my tournament was supposed to happen. Now, and again, I'm like summarizing some of these details.
Sure.
I've done all this work as a high schooler to like gather Xbox consoles. I'd borrowed like tube TVs from friends. I had borrowed Xbox consoles. I had spent like 3 months, first off, trying to figure out how do you host a video game tournament, right?
Right, yeah.
And it's my first time. I'm 16 years old. I've never organized something like this before. I'm 17 this time. I started when I was 16, though. I had started organizing this event. I got my friends together to volunteer. You know, we had like had this little Facebook group where people were signing up to register. So it's really like, you know, our first time trying to take initiative as young people to organize something we were excited about.
Yeah.
And a couple of days before it's supposed to happen, it gets shut down by the people who are supposed to be defending the public good because they believe Halo is corrupting the minds of America's youth.
By the fucking man.
Right.
Like, I can't. Yeah. This feels like the setup to like a 1980s Footloose, like wizard movie, right? Where like there's gonna be a like I can't I'm sure I don't know what the outcome is, but this is I'm having it's very impressive that there is something after this story, because this is a lot of resistance.
Yes. So we end up incurring all sorts of friction trying to host this video game tournament. So I had to cancel the event. My superintendent's like, I actually went into the office of our superintendent at the time at the school district. And I was trying to, like, I'm a 17-year-old kid in her office, right?
Yeah.
Trying to explain and defend, you know, video games and why I love games and why this event is totally fine. It's no different than, you know, the film is literature course that I'm in right now. It's no different than us watching, you know, R-rated movies in school. But it doesn't matter, because she has a voicemail from the local community police department, the head of the police department, saying, this event has a public safety. You need to, like, not let this happen. So she's like, look, Zach, and she doesn't know anything about video games, right? Like, in her defense, like, whatever.
Yeah.
So she's like, hey, I'm sorry, we'll refund your money, but, like, we can't allow this event to happen, with her revoke your permit. Well, our local newspaper, the Ann Arbor News, ran this story about it. They sort of found out, because I had to write this, like, you know, I had to write a blog on MySpace. I had to, like, send out notices to everybody. Like, hey, fellow gamers, I'm really sorry. And especially, imagine, like, you signed up for a video game tournament, right?
Yeah, you're stoked.
Right. I mean, wow. Literally, people would message me, like, dude, I, like, canceled going to a concert so I could come to your video game tournament. And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. I just spent the last 3 months of my life, like, you know, skipping, like, you know, being late to sports practice and whatever else, so I could, like, try to organize this event. I don't know what to do. So my local newspaper ran the story, and they wrote it with the angle, like, local teens try to do something productive but get shut down by the man. I agree with you. I think they did the right thing. Every thing to happen. And to be honest, it just sort of read that way too. Matter of fact, it's like people are reading this article like, wait, what happened? Somebody uploaded it to this website, Dig. If you remember dig.com.
Oh, I remember Dig.
It's kind of like the precursor to Reddit. We went viral on Dig. And at the time, I had never heard of Dig. Like, I'm a teenager.
Yeah.
My knowledge of the video game industry was pretty limited. Like, whatever, you know, was stocked in my local GameStop and whatever I read in Game Informer was sort of what I knew about the industry, right? So I started getting all these random messages on, like, Facebook and MySpace at the time. Like, dude, Zach, I heard about your Halo tournament being canceled, man. Like, that's ridiculous. My church youth group, we host Halo tournaments all the time. Like, It even reached the ears of Bungie. And Marty O'Donnell wrote a letter to our local newspaper and totally stuck up for us. He was like, hey, Ann Arbor News, Marty O'Donnell here, audio director of the Halo franchise. I saw this article about kids trying to organize a Halo tournament. He's like, this is absolutely ridiculous. He's like, he literally is like, I challenge anyone to find content in Halo that's worse than what you see on primetime television. I should know. I put it in the game. So, like, Bungie Studios will pay Zach and his friends any money they lost trying to put this event together. These people who are protecting the moral high ground of your community, they can call me when they pull their heads out of that hole in the ground.
Wow.
And Bungie just like Marty really went
lit
to
him
bat
up.
For us. Yeah, just totally went to bat. And I like started feeling really inspired by this, because I started now I'm becoming aware of, like, wow, there's, like, the creators of Halo are taking our side in this. Like,
yeah.
People who are running podcasts at the time started reaching out. So I was like, you know, look, we've done all this work to organize a video game tournament. We should just take this effort and demonstrate actually the positive things that happen when us gamers get together around what we're excited about. I'd grown up playing sports, playing video games, doing all the normal, you know, extracurricular things, like we'd go out with friends and whatnot. I was in a band with some friends, but video games were the consistent hobby. Like, I would come home after sports practice. I wanted to play video games. I wanted to hop on Star Wars Galaxies with my friends. Like, that's what we did during summer break. Wanted to play Warcraft 2, wanted to play Warcraft 3, like, you know, like, wanted to play Counter-Strike, that's what I did when I got home. And I always had gotten flack from teachers and coaches around how excited I was about video games, because every school project I ever did had something to do with video games. You know, anytime I was talking about, I'm sure we can all relate. Thing I was interested in had something to do with video games. So I was like, look, I'm so sick of these stereotypes that exist around gamers, the game community. I'm sick of putting up with it personally. I can't believe it's manifested in this way with this police officer. F this guy. I'm going to run a new event for charity. We're going to take any money we were going to make from ticket sales and we'll donate to you know, a cause that seems cool. And hopefully people have a good time, and that'll be our new event. So I end up organizing this LAN party called Gamers for Giving. And thanks to the press we got around our event being canceled, we ended up spreading the word to way more people.
Yeah.
The event ended up being much larger, and we ended up donating money to a local charity organization. And at the time, you know, as a young person, I had never really been involved in a philanthropic cause before.
Mm.
And so I accidentally ended up discovering my local hospital was having a hard time providing kids with activities. Somebody that I was like, a family friend of mine was like, hey, well, if you're thinking about charity causes, you should go check out Mott Children's Hospital over in Ann Arbor. You know, they're trying to provide kids with games sometimes. Maybe you could team up with them and do some fundraising. I was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let me go chat with them. So I go to the hospital. I called the hospital. I'm like, hey, I explained the situation, this event that I'm hosting. And their response was like, oh, you know, it'd be wonderful. It'd be great if you could come in and like get us, you know, help buy video games for the kids.
What?
So that's how Gamers Outreach was born. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I discovered that they had this challenge. We hosted the first event. It went really well. I had no intention of Gamers Outreach being my full-time job at this point, right? I'm like, hey, yeah, this is fun, positive for the community. I'm still in high school. I need to finish high school. Then I'm maybe going to go to college. I know that I want to work in games, but look, as long as Gamers Outreach, as long as people are having a good time, as long as I'm having a good time, as long as it's not interrupting, like, you know, life, why stop this? Let's do this again next year. So it became an annual thing. Fast forward 14 years, Gamers Outreach is now an entity I described, right?
Yeah.
Right? We're on this mission to make video games available in hospitals. We support around 230 healthcare facilities nationwide. We estimate the devices we've deployed are supporting somewhere between 2 to 2.5 million play sessions each year across all these hospitals.
Incredible.
Now it's my full-time job. So there's a transition there at some point, right? We have a team of people that oversee all this work, and we still host Gamers for Giving. Now it's a big LAN party. It's the third largest LAN, to my knowledge, behind QuakeCon and DreamHack in North America. So
I did not know that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we have this basketball stadium we rent out. We have a couple thousand people that bring their PCs. Some of them are competing in, like, you know, like other tournaments we host. So we host like a LAN party. We've stayed true to our roots. Like, we are gamers ourselves. We want to get together. We want to get together and play video games.
Yeah.
And then we stream it on the internet. So thanks to the, you know, rise of streaming, we reached out to creators like yourself, Ben, and we'll invite folks to, you know, come by,
like me,
be a part of Gamers for Giving, and reach out to their community. So, That's the story of Gamers Outreach. That's how we're founded. And you know, we've discovered that all these hospitals have the same problem. It turns out that, you know, they see quality of life programs as a discretionary spend, not necessarily a clinical spend. And so because of that, oftentimes the patient experience, it just takes a back seat because it's not the priority, understandably. And that's why we exist as a nonprofit, is because we see this as a service to the patients and families first.
Mm.
And we can understand why a hospital obviously like would need to prioritize resources differently, but we don't feel that that should necessarily inhibit somebody being able to play games, right?
So that makes sense.
Anyway, I'll cut myself off. I've rambled long enough.
No, that was an incredible, incredible story. And I don't feel like any of that should have been left unmentioned. Like, if that was the highlights of that journey, like, goddamn, that went so many places. And I am pretty goddamn sure I read, was it a letter that Marty O'Donnell wrote?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I found and read that letter, and I was like, goddamn right. I was like, that's right. Video games, they're good. Dicks. Like, I remember that moment. I didn't remember everything else that was attached to it. So that, for that personally to me, is like mind blowing, because it was you.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. So the thing I wanted to ask, because you were talking about, you know, everybody's, this is like one of the big questions I want to ask you too. So I'm really happy you opened it up, because it is a financial decision, right? They're trying to choose between, you know, treatment methodologies and things to enhance treatment and things that are going to do other side of things, like, you know, enhance recovery, blah, blah, blah. And so it's hard with video games, because even though there's a lot of research, about how video games can aid in recovery. And there's even new research with like AR and VR programs for burn victims, reducing pain sensation by like 50%. Do you think that those kind of studies are going to make it easier to get games into hospitals?
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. If there's clinical justification to incorporate games as part of a patient's treatment, that definitely helps advocate for their presence in hospitals without question. Interestingly, it's interesting you bring up, you know, people who are recovering from burns. We had a child who had a really severe burn on the side of his arm, and every few days nurses were coming in to change out bandages. And it got to a point where this kid was so anxious over the process that six different nurses had to hold him down to complete the procedure, right? And you can't really blame the kid. I mean, like taking off a Band-Aid, let alone, I mean, imagine having like a giant burn. Suck. Yeah, so like, no, I wouldn't want to be part of that at all. Well, somebody found out he likes playing Lego Batman, and you know, we haven't talked about a program yet, but you know, one of the things we do is we construct these portable video game kiosks.
Yes.
Called Go Karts. It's just an acronym, Gamers Outreach Cart. And these are devices like there's an Xbox or a PlayStation, a monitor, and nurses will wheel these things room to room. So games are mobile.
If you've worked in a hospital, it looks very similar to like the check-in station that rolls around with the insurance person. Just a little bit cleaner looking and like definitely more gamified. If you're looking for a visual, audio listeners there.
Yeah, they call them workstations on wheels, sometimes computers on wheels.
Yeah.
And it's like, so actually, funny enough, our design is very much inspired by those. But yeah, this is intended to play video games. So we have these devices that roll around the hospital. Kids can use them to play games. So the nurse wheels in one of our gaming carts, and they let this kid play on the device for, you know, a handful of minutes. By the time they're ready to start his procedure, this kid, his only concern was whether he could finish his boss battle. They went from six nurses helping this kid to two.
Wow.
One nurse to change his bandages. The other nurse was there to hold the other half of the controller so that he could keep playing his game.
Oh my gosh.
So suddenly, wow. You can derive a lot from that, right? Like, this kid's having a better healthcare experience thanks to video games.
Yeah.
The nurses are having an easier time doing their job. They're not trying to like cause pain for anybody. And then there's an economic argument to be made for the hospital because those four other staff members can go serve other patients who need care.
Yep.
And that's a big deal in hospital land, right? Like, if you're a nurse responsible for, say, 10 patient rooms, throughout a given shift, you can only spend so much time with each patient, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are spending time setting up an Xbox for one kid, then, you know, only to find out the other kid wants it. And then, well, this kid's now he's... In the time it took me to set it up, he now isn't feeling well. I need to like unplug everything.
Yeah.
You can just literally burn time. And that time needs to be used for patient care. So
yes.
If we can make games easy to manage in hospitals, and we can demonstrate that their existence in hospitals is making a difference like that, that's super meaningful.
Yeah.
The challenge is that installing games at scale is an expensive proposition, right? That's why we just announced Portal. Like we're working on the software platform that's gonna hopefully turn hospitals into LAN centers. Like if you've ever been to an esports arena or a LAN center, it occurred to me like, oh my gosh, hospitals are basically big LAN centers. Like they have policies in place where sometimes they don't want kids going on the internet. They don't want like kids like, you know, maybe watching adult content when there's like other kids, you know, there's all sorts of like random things they're concerned about, liabilities and such. So sometimes things have to stay local. Well, that's basically what LAN centers do, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you put a server in and like let the server connect to the internet, but have all the endpoints, like have the local content. You can still like provide all the licenses to these devices. So anyway, what we're trying to do is go into these hospitals. We want to create a world where you could basically walk into a hospital. There's going to be an entertainment offering in a similar way that you can get on an airplane nowadays. And there's like a TV screen in front of you. You've got movies, television, maybe you've got access to Wi-Fi, you can type some emails, it's somewhat productive. We're trying to provide people in hospitals with access to the same things they enjoy in their normal life, with the context of being respectful of the medical environment and this sort of these enterprise-esque facilities.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, enterprise level stuff has tons of rules, right? Like I learned that because unfortunately the internet when we moved into this house was garbage. And so the only way I've spent a year and a half fixing it. And then I had to get an enterprise line and it was like a 6 month process. And that was just for like an internet drop. And then, so like you scale that out to like every system that exists in a hospital. And it's like really mind crushing how complicated that can get. So I think that it is, it's a very elegant solution to utilize that complexity to deliver the kind of care or the sort of end point that you're looking, which is like, I want you to play video games in the hospital because I know it's good for you. And it's, I think that it's incredible. I think it's an incredibly implemented idea.
You know, and actually on that note real quick as well, I mean, speaking of folks recovering from burns, there was a young person that was trying to regain their strength to stand. And a nurse emailed us and said, hey, I just want to let you know, we had this child working on some standing exercises. We introduced your gaming cart. And while they were playing video games, we had them, you know, stand up. They were able to stand for three times as long just by introducing video games. And I think of it kind of like when you go to the gym, if you like, you know, like to listen to music while you're on the treadmill.
Totally.
And like push it just that little bit further to like get that last rep. And sometimes you're able to like kind of like just mentally go to that headspace where you like get some inspiration from the song.
Absolutely.
Games can serve that same purpose, right? I mean, I listen to video game soundtracks sometimes while I work out, right? Like the Final Fantasy VII Remake soundtrack was phenomenal. I turn on like the Airbuster theme, like if I'm lifting you. That shit is epic. So
that bops. It's good.
Yeah, it's good. So anyway, there's so much to say. I basically, you know, as a gamer, I've become obsessed with solving this problem. Like I tell people, I don't have an intention to work on gamers hours the rest of my life. But I do want to solve this problem for as long as it takes to solve. So that might mean working in gamers hours for the rest of my life. I don't know. But like the point is really about, we as a nonprofit, the way I kind of frame what we do is we're not trying to exist in perpetuity necessarily. We want to solve this problem.
Yeah.
Whatever means it takes to like get to that place is what our goal should be. I think of it similarly, like if you're trying to find the cure for cancer, like that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
And you
eventually you're working yourself out of a job.
Right. That's the idea. So we're pretty amped. And the good news with what we do, I think it's very tangible, right? Like there's a number for every hospital. Okay, how many gaming carts would you like to have? How many patient rooms do you have? How do we set up portal? And there is a point where like a hospital is saturated. Like,
right.
Great. We've got all the games we need. We're good. Sweet. But that means we can move on to the next one, right? So it just so happens the problem is very large. There are 6,400 plus hospitals, if you include adult facilities in the U.S. alone. I don't know what the number is globally, to be honest, but like it's probably a lot more than that. And, you know, in the U.S., we're in about 90% of pediatric hospitals right now, and our presence in those facilities kind of varies. But there's just exclusively children's hospitals, there's about 250.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in about 90% of those. And so we've got a ways to go, right? The good news is I don't even think we're going to be the only ones to do this, frankly. Like, there are other groups. Child's Play obviously exists, and we actually partner with them. They gave us, speaking of grants, they gave us a grant to help us manufacture our go-karts in a better way. So we team up when in my view on that is like collaboration over competition. Like the goal is to help kids have video games. Like, let's do that.
That's the way I feel about fundraising.
Yeah.
You know, like because we work together on the Rare Drop side of things for stuff. Like, and I say this in every meeting with any charity I work with is like, you know, our goal is to take everything that we're all learning together and then like make a thing. And it's like, this is the system. And then like, we're done. Like, that's like at Rare Drop. It's like, okay, this is it. Like, and please everyone use it and like change the world. Thanks. Because I think that when you work with the goal of working yourself out of a job, you're working on the right kind of solution because you're not leaving room on the table for things to be incomplete when you're seeking to be done with a problem, right? So you're going to examine new and interesting ways to sort of like deliver on endpoints, which like I said, with Portal is a really good example of that. You're going to find ways to invent systems to streamline it because you're not just thinking about you using this. You're thinking about how do I turn this into a system that fits the need that this problem, you know, is shaped like. And I think that it gets you the right solution because it's, you know, at the end of the day for us, it's just like, let's raise as much money for charity as we can. And then, and then also like, you know, with the rest of our time, just make people laugh with the rest of the silly shit that we do.
Yeah.
Post memes, do TikTok stuff. So yeah. so you've gone over you've gone over a couple of your divisions right now. You've talked about like Gamers Outweeks in general. You've talked about the go-kart program. You've talked about Portal. I don't believe we talked about Grid yet, the Grid. So I wanted to give you some time to talk about that, because that's another thing that you've rolled out this year that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, during every year we have our Gamers for Giving fundraiser, right? This year we hosted a virtual event since we can't gather together in person at our LAN party. Rare dropped health quite a bit. We were really excited. We got some super high quality stream assets people can use. Actually, a lot of streamers who were working with us were like, wow, these are better than my alerts.
that's what we want. We want everyone to be excited and have like nice luxury experience, because it feels good.
Yeah.
I always want that when I'm streaming.
Yeah, cool. I think it was really amazing to see. So props to the team for putting all that together.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monster Lagoon. Yeah, those guys are pretty talented. And they turn stuff around fast too, man. We were really impressed.
So fast.
This is like a plug for Monster Lagoon now. Yes.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we're both plugging.
Hashtag ad. Yeah. So we have our fundraising event, and we made a series of announcements. And it's really actually like some of these things we're going to continue building out, right? Like we announced them. We just want to let people know, hey, as a nonprofit, you're donating to us throughout the year. We want to give you a heads up on like things that we think are cool and what we're working on and what we're going to continue to fundraise for later. So we announced a couple new board members. We announced a couple new programs. Portal was one of them. We also announced this initiative called Save Point, which are it's basically a program where we're building these like really high-tech vending machines and we're placing them in hospitals. And the idea is that kids will be able to go to these things as they complete treatment and get toys, game codes, fun items from partners, and leave the hospital feeling like a sense of accomplishment and inspiration, you know, as they've progressed through treatment. And speaking of Final Fantasy, actually, that idea literally was ripped from Final Fantasy VII Remake. You know, like, you save your game, you go up to that vending machine and you buy your potion and whatnot. And I was like, dude, I literally set aside like a week or two when that game came out. I was like, I'm just going to play Final Fantasy VII Remake and enjoy this game.
Mm.
And it like occurred to me, I was like, man, this could be cool. Like for some reason, I thought of it as like a hospital program. Like, you know, this could be a thing. And
That's the cool thing about the creative process is like when you're really just trying to figure out whatever your problem is, like suddenly everything becomes a potential solution. Like for me, it's like there's like this pattern in my head and there's like a background process and my brain is just constantly like, no, maybe, no, like. So the fact that you're like, I saw that, and then for some reason I thought this, like, I think that that's incredible.
Yeah, it's about like connecting unrelated dots, I think.
Yeah.
I love going to art museums. This is a quick anecdote, and then I'll come back to the Grid. But okay. I love going to art museums for that reason, you know, like to take time to sit down and extrapolate meaning from a painting, I think is actually, I always feel like in my head, it feels like a creative exercise. Like,
yeah.
You're trying to look at all these little details to like come up with what could this mean, and what I decide it means might be different than what you decide it means, and that's okay. That's kind of the point of art, right? Is like we look at that through that lens. The Grid is basically one of the things we announced during Gamers for Giving. It's our monthly giving community. So one of the things that's popped up over the years is people will ask us, how can I be involved with Gamers Outreach? How do I help? What can I do outside of volunteering? And so what we've decided is like, let's launch a monthly giving community that allows people to contribute on a monthly basis. So like our work is being funded on the sort of ongoing level. And then those people also, we want to give them like access to our process. So we've rolled out a few like incentives, if you will, for people who join the Grid, but they're really like just almost like membership benefits. We're going to be hosting quarterly update calls in the same way like a public company would host a, like an earnings report. We're going to be hosting quarterly update calls where we just talk to people and say, hey, these are the cool things we're working on. Here are the things that we're kind of struggling with at the moment. Here are the things that are going really great. Here's the progress we're making. And it's really intended to be a way for people to be involved on an ongoing basis. It helps us as a charity have a sense of consistency around resources, right? Because every year, from the charity side, like we have on part of what we do is thinking about our programs, right? We've got people who think about, are the go-karts functioning today? You know, are our programs working in an efficient manner? But then sometimes we also have to think about fundraising. Okay, how do we continue to fund these programs? How do we grow our impact? How do we keep the lights on? How do we hire more staff to increase our capacity, right? Like, there are all these questions that you're sort of constantly balancing.
Yeah.
And from a fundraising standpoint, every time the year resets, it's like, all right, got to get out there again and start fishing, right? Like, got to start hunting. And it can be exhausting.
It can.
So these monthly giving is a way to create sustainability for charities.
Yes.
And for the people who are supporters, it's a way to help your nonprofit get to a place where there is a sense of consistency and longevity in the work that they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's meaningful for all these reasons. And what we're just trying to do is like, hey, we want to try to provide benefits that are unique to us, that we can, like, you know, show our supporters. Another one of those benefits is, for people who are members of the grid, we're going to give them early access to buying tickets to our annual LAN party, Gamers for Giving. So when we get ready to go into 2022, we really want the event to be a celebration of our community. Like, our event is now, you know, back in the day before streaming, the only way to fundraise was by, like, ticket sales, right? Like, we would sell, you know, tickets. Ooh. To this event. But now what's crazy is, like, a lot of our fundraising really happens from stream marathons and sponsorship, not necessarily from our in-person ticket sales, right? Mm. We still want to host our event because we feel it's, like, part of our cultural identity. Like, that's really how we started. It keeps us true to our roots. It's fun. We want to get everybody together. We really think of the event as, like, as much of what we do as is giving gaming cards to hospitals. But we also want it to be a celebration of our community. So that's kind of our thought process behind the grid, is like, when people come to Gamers for Giving, we are literally connecting them into the grid. We are building a grid.
Yeah.
But we lay down all the network infrastructure. We have network engineers who build out. We spend the year building the server, configuring all of our switches. And then we go and deploy this equipment, right? And everybody plugs in. They become part of a literal physical grid in our event. That's where the name is derived from.
Beautiful.
And you know, we celebrate Gamers for Giving together. And so it's a way to, it goes back to that origin story around gamers getting together around what we're passionate about, what we're excited about, creating that sense of community, and then doing something good with it. And then, of course, it's a bit of a nod to Tron as well. Like, no doubt about that. Like, we're gonna, like, have some fun. In the newer Tron movie, I guess the sequel, there's, you know, Kevin Flynn, you know.
Oh, yeah, Flynn's speech.
The whole monologue. Yeah, the grid, a digital frontier. You know, so cool. So we're like, we got to, like, give a nod to one of the greatest gaming movies of all time. Right?
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. Well, that's when you told us the name, I was like, yes. Because it plugs in perfectly.
But literally, that's what I said. Like, it literally is not. It's not just a random nod to Tron. It's like, we literally are connecting people to a grid. That's the point. Is we want these people to be part of Gamers for Giving.
Yeah, like, you earn the nod to it by, like, literally doing it. Like, nobody thinks it's cheesy when you're like, no, like, it's like, I build a 10,000 person LAN party. Oh, that makes sense. No, that's great.
Right. Exactly.
Zach, time has absolutely flown. But we've covered so much. So I just wanted to take the last little bit of time that we had, and I just wanted to ask, like, I know we've been talking about Gamers Outreach and everything that you've been doing the whole time, but is there anything else that you want to plug or promote, or you really want to make sure people get out of this? And then I will take us on home.
Sure, man. Well, I mean, I'd say if anybody's interested in learning more about our cause, of course, you can check us out online, gamersoutreach.org. You can become a member of the grid. It's the first button you'll see on the homepage of the website. If you'd like to follow us on social, you know, we're on at Gamers Outreach, across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, primarily. And I'd say more broadly, you know, I just send a message of gratitude to the gaming community. Ben, if you have any viewers who are familiar with us or have supported our work,
It
really has come a long way. Every single day, literally as we're talking right now, there are kids benefiting from the generosity of the gaming community and the go-karts that are rolling around Children's Colorado's testing portal right now as we speak.
Wow.
So
amazing.
All of this has been made possible thanks to gamers. We're just super grateful and really appreciate everyone's support.
That is great. Chat and everyone listening on the podcast feed, thank you so much for tuning in, for listening. I appreciate Zach. I appreciate you for joining us. I appreciate you sharing your incredible story Definitely one of the more pushing the rock up the hill to get it done stories that we've heard when it comes to getting things together. That was it was amazing for me to listen to. So I want to say, like, thank you for me personally, you know, for sharing that. I loved every minute of it. Chat, as always, if you are listening to this and you thought of somebody while we were talking, please send this podcast to them. That is all I ever really want, is to get the information out to the people who need it. And you probably know them better than I do. So please do that. Other than those things, you can always rate or subscribe or whatever, but please share it. So for myself and Zach and everybody at Rare Drop, peace. And thank you for tuning in. Bye, everybody. Goodbye. You always gotta wave.